You're listening to a stage talk titled Investigating a Massacre in Burkina Faso with the Bellingcat team. This week, we were joined by my research colleagues Logan Williams, Yuri van der Weide, and Jake Godin to discuss their latest investigation into the killing of more than 100 people in the town of Barcelago in Burkina Faso. In the talk, we explored their research techniques and findings and discussed how you might protect yourself when covering such traumatic cases. We also mentioned some useful resources both within the Discord server and online for further research into the region. You can find all the links mentioned in the talk in the description of this podcast. The talk was hosted by me, Charlotte Marr, on Thursday the 12th of September 2024 in the Bellingcat Discord server. All right, let's get going and people can filter in as we go. Welcome to this week's stage talk. Today, I'm joined by my wonderful colleagues, Bellingcat researchers Yuri van der Weide, Jake Godin, and Logan Williams. All three researchers are active within the server and may have crossed paths with many of our audience members before. They're here today, however, to discuss their recent investigation into a massacre in Burkina Faso. A warning to those listening that we will be discussing themes of civilian harm, abuse, and death. Sadly, in late August, several videos emerged online, seemingly filmed by the assailants, of a killing of more than 100 unarmed civilians who were busy digging trenches. Our team went to work analysing these graphic videos in an attempt to geolocate them and verify that the attack took place. What we found was that some of these videos were not as they seemed, and others were horrifying proof of the timeline of the massacre and how it unfolded. As we talk, please put the questions in the chat, which you'll see in the as the little message in a bubble symbol on your right-hand side of your screen. And I'll ask them as we move into the Q&A section. A reminder for those who've just joined, if you don't want me to read out your Discord username when I'm reading out your question, please put that in your question as well. Now I'm going to pass over to Yuri, who is going to give us a little breakdown of the investigation. Yuri.
Yes, thank you, Charlie. So first of all, hi, my name is Yuri van der Weide. Again, I'm not here that often, so that's why I just wanted to introduce myself very briefly. I did just one other stage talk. I think that was last year. But I mostly focus on, it's not only Africa, but mostly, right? It was a bit more than a week ago. I was talking to a source of mine, let's say. It's mostly just a contact, right? He keeps tabs of what's going down in the Sahel region quite a bit. And he notified me about what had happened. There was this big massacre in a town called Barcelogo in Burkina Faso. So the town is about 81 miles, 130 kilometers from the capital, Ouagadougou, and at about 40 kilometers, 25 miles from Kaya, which is the next biggest town, right? It's between Barcelogo and Ouagadougou. You have Kaya, and Kaya is also the capital of that province region, yeah, the central north region. So this was like I think town has about 30,000 people, more or less, Barcelogo, that is. And there were, so the claim was that civilians were digging a trench around the town. We have seen that the digging of the trench has started already, I think it was in 2022. Am I right, Logan? I don't remember exactly. But anyway, that was quite
late 2022.
Thank you. Yeah, so late 2022, they started digging the trench. We don't know who first started digging the trench, if that was the army or just the civilians or BDPs, which are, militias made up of, just locals, volunteers who want to help out the army. Or, if this was someone else digging the trenches. But in this, like the last month in August, right, we saw videos also circulating of civilians they're in the trenches. We have heard that civilians, they felt obliged to dig those trenches as well. And there was a lot of pressure for them to do so. So they were still digging the trench around the whole city. When these massacres occurred, right? They were digging the trench kind of east, southeast of the city, of the town. And that's when members of Jamaat Nusrat al-Islam wal Muslimin, I'll just refer to them as Jenin, easier, just the acronym. A group with ties to Al-Qaeda. So members of that group attacked mostly men working to dig those trenches. There are all kinds of estimates. Some estimates go up to 400 people who were killed. Jake actually counted some of the slain, right? In I think it was one video, right, Jake? But you counted 124 people. So when that came to our attention, we started to look into this. We tried to geolocate some of the footage that was circulating online with people saying that this was from this event. Most of the footage was filmed by one guy, right, and member of Jenin, at least judging by the clothes the guy was wearing. You can see a little bit of that. We started looking into that. I think the first thing that I did was actually request, I asked Logan if he could request some satellite imagery for us, and maybe Logan can tell you more about what kind of satellite imagery we requested and how that helped.
Sure. So there were two types of satellite imagery that proved very helpful to us in this investigation. The quickest imagery we were able to get was what's called synthetic aperture radar, or SAR imagery. And this is satellite imagery that's taken not with a conventional camera looking at light on the surface of the Earth, but by transmitting radio waves and then picking up the reflections of those radio waves. And radio waves will bounce differently off of different types of surfaces, whether that's grass or dirt or water or man-made structures. And then you can look at those differences to see what you're looking at. But it's a lot harder to use for geolocation or interpretation. So for a few days, we were trying to use this synthetic aperture radar imagery because it was all we had to do some geolocations that were quite tricky. But one thing that you can pick up well with synthetic aperture radar imagery are vertical surfaces, whether that's the edge of a building or whether that's the edge of a trench. So it worked really well for mapping out the trench construction almost on a day-by-day basis with the other imagery we were able to find to see when they were constructing new parts of the trench. And that helped us narrow down kind of the locations that we wanted to look at to do these tricky geolocations. Eventually, we were able to get Planet Labs imagery as well, high-resolution SkySat imagery, that then really helped with the geolocations, which I didn't do too much on myself, but I was able to get that imagery to the other researchers who were able to do some fantastic work there.
Yes, thank you, Logan. I think maybe I can explain a little bit how that imagery that Logan provided helped us narrow down the search area, and then I'll pass it on to Jake to explain how he actually matched the footage to the satellite imagery. So I mentioned that over the course of the year or years that they had been digging the trench, you see that in very old footage, there was no trench. And then in older footage, I forgot from what year it was. I think it was earlier this year. You see where the trench stops, right? Because it just goes around the city, the town, right? and it stops kind of to the east of the town. So we checked, okay, it stops here very close to this road that goes to the east, right? And we started looking to see if they continued digging trenches. So we compared the old image, the old Google Earth image with, so that was mostly doing that with Miguel. Miguel isn't here today, he's off. But yeah, Charlie shared an image here in the chat as well for the people who aren't seeing it. So there you see a black line, right? That's the old trench. And then you have a purple trench, or like a purple line that stops, but that crosses the roads. That's the white line, right? And then also there is another brighter line, right? That's more, you know, pinkish in color. I'll talk about that later, but we started comparing the satellite image from Google Earth to the new satellite imagery, right? And we saw that they had been digging close to that road. The old trench stopped a little bit north of the road, and the new trench continued and then continued past that road. So we said, like, let's try to focus on this area. And that's where Jake comes in to explain how he actually geolocated it.
Yeah. I mean, the key thing was out of these videos, there was a few of them. A couple of them, the guy's on the motorcycle and he's riding around near this trench full of bodies. And then another one, which is the one that I essentially used for the geolocation, is a guy walking along the trench. And it's pretty graphic. I mean, it's about as graphic as it gets with dead bodies kind of just filling up the trench. We thought it would be pertinent to try and count them, so I just did a quick count of that the best I could, because the quality of the video is not the greatest. And there's a lot of bodies stacked on top of each other. Kind of a grim task, but a general count was definitely more than 100. I got closer to 124, but so we kind of put that as like an at least number. But another key thing about this video is that the trench ended. And so, yeah, as the guy filming walked along the trench, you could see that the trench kind of, it became less and less deep, and then it was just dirt. So it was essentially, you could tell that the trench was under control. It was being dug, and they essentially got to the end point of where the trench was, you know, currently being dug, hence all the people working on digging it that were present there. And so when it came to looking at the satellite imagery, both the SAR imagery that Logan was able to get and then the Planet Labs imagery that we were able to get later, the best place to look was, okay, where's the new trench at? Because this is the new part of the trench. And, you know, we wanted to make sure it was even around here. We were fairly sure based off of all the reports. But there was also another video that Yuri did a really good job of geolocating, and we thought it was nearby, but it turns out it was Mali. But yeah, so we kind of got an idea that Logan had found another new trench that was to the north. You can kind of see it on the image that Charlie shared, but it's to the northwest of the city. And so looking at that small new trench and then the other new trench that we'd seen that ended up crossing the road, we kind of looked at both of those areas as like interest points. And it wasn't, in terms of visual clues, it was the trench ending, which was a big one. There's also a distinct looking tree, a couple distinct looking trees that were in the background of the video. Pretty large, which is useful. It wasn't just like bushes and shrubbery. And that was also, that helped determine the location as well, because if you looked at where the trench ended in the Planet Labs imagery, you could see that there was, it's not as high quality as what you would get with Google Earth, but Google Earth wasn't as recent as we needed. But combining the two and using the recent Planet Labs imagery to see where the trench kind of ended, to see these shapes that look like they could be the trees, and then to use the Google Earth imagery to essentially get a better picture of what those shapes were, which of course they were the trees, kind of really helped nail down the geolocation. There's also a telephone pole visible in the background, just barely. And those are typically great markers for geolocations as well, because they show up in satellite imagery, especially Google Earth imagery, due to their shadows. And if they're not in one set of imagery, you can generally get a good shadow cast from a telephone pole by just flicking through the historic imagery available on Google Earth. And they don't tend to move that often. I mean, you know, they don't tend to, like, unless they're new, brand new, they're typically around for a while. So if you're able to find those in the backgrounds of videos or imagery, they can serve as, they can also be super frustrating because they're identical. And so it's like, you can kind of be like, okay, which one is it? But if you have other identifying information, like these trees in this case and the trench, then it kind of also helps verify, like, oh, there's the telephone pole in the background visible on Google Earth. And so that's kind of how we ended up doing that geolocation, which I think some other people were able to find it as well, including Reuters, which is super, you know, it's also, it helps verify, you know, adds to the collective info on the location being where, you know, where we knew it was at. And yeah, I mean, Yuri, if you wanted to talk a bit about the other video that was geolocated, or I think it's also very interesting, the purple or the pink magenta line on our graphic here shows the trench that was constructed since the video was shot, which is kind of wild to me. I don't know if you want to talk about that some now, Yuri.
Yeah, sure. Shall I maybe start with that new, or the last bit of the trench, which is actually the largest, or one of the larger bits, right? So if you go back to that screenshot that Charlie shared with us, right, of the satellite image, you see in that satellite image that magenta line, right, which we describe as new trenches since the attack, right? That's like between August 29 and September 2. So first we saw people digging the trenches, you know, just using, I don't know, spades, shovels, whatever. And I guess that takes a while, right, to dig a trench that way. And I think they were moving a bit slowly, I'd say, right? I don't know exactly when they started to dig, but yeah, it wasn't going that fast. And then after the attack, all of a sudden, right, when we were able to acquire new satellite imagery I'm trying to remember that satellite imagery where we saw those new trenches was from what date? Can someone look that up? I've got it open here as well.
Yeah, it's in the graphic. We had imagery from August 29, which was the main imagery we used to do the geolocations. And then we were able to get new imagery from September 2nd that showed that the trenches had grown by quite a bit, something like 4 kilometers in 3 days. And then we were able to get imagery from September 3rd as well that showed an additional 2 kilometers of trench in that it was about 32 hours of time that passed between those two images.
Yeah, so it grew very fast, right? It was a span of a couple of days. It grew that fast exponentially, I'd say. So for me, that was very interesting. I don't know how they achieved it. I guess it's fair to say that they used some equipment, excavators or something. I think, Logan, you mentioned something about seeing some marks in the grass that might indicate that they use some vehicles to get there. But again, I don't know if how certain we are. So,
yeah, I think Miguel spotted that the new section of trench has a lot more vehicle tracks around it than we saw in the older new section of track. But we didn't find any videos that showed earth moving equipment or catch any of them in satellite imagery. So it's a bit speculative to say whether or not that was why the trench suddenly got so much faster there. There's obviously a lot of kinds of vehicles that might be driving around in this area, so we don't know for sure what happened.
Yeah, it's possible it could be like military escorts, or because a lot of the people in the videos that we looked at from the initial massacre, there were like bicycles. So it was like people that probably didn't, there were actually very little vehicles visible. I don't think any in the videos other than the motorcycles that the militants were on. So it makes sense that maybe these new vehicle tracks that are kind of going off the main road towards this, the new section of trenches that were built, where either is construction equipment or, you know, armed escorts or something.
Yeah.
Miguel also did a really good job with the it's mentioned earlier on in the piece, but I wanted to mention that Miguel did a essentially it was like grass pattern analysis in order to kind of follow the this motorcycle video kind of matched up the patterns of the sand with the grass that was visible in the more recent planet imagery, which really, you know, you when you're looking at it from the ground horizontal view, it's a little bit tricky, but it turns out like the shapes kind of match up when you're looking at it from the satellite imagery.
Well, yeah, and this is the kind of geolocation that you can only do once you are very certain that you're looking in the right area. Otherwise, you will just drive yourself crazy looking at patterns and noise and pattern matching things that don't match up.
Yeah, definitely, Logan. So that's also why that imagery that Logan got us, right? The SAR imagery was so key to us for us to narrow down that area, because we knew it was somewhere close to town, right? Where they are building trenches, but it would have been so much more difficult if without that new imagery. So yeah, that was great. And also, yeah, a crazy geolocation there, right? All right. Actually, Jake was also talking about another geolocation. Maybe later I can share a screenshot of that. So that was another video that was circulating on the internet. And some people, right after this happened, this was, I think, one of the first videos that people started posting online saying, oh, this is from Barcelogo, where Jenin militants have attacked this many civilians and killed them. Actually, first, I kind of assumed, all right, let's see. We did try to do a reverse image search, but since it's a video, you have to search by keyframe, right? And you have to select the right keyframe in order to get good results, good matches. So first, we didn't get any matches, and we thought, okay, perhaps it's really Barcelogo. I started searching, a bit closer to the city, because in that video, you see several structures, several houses or, buildings, whatever. We found one place that I initially thought was similar. In the end, it turned out that it wasn't a match. We compared it to more recent imagery that we obtained for that area. I think it was also SkySat imagery from planet.com. We saw, okay, this isn't really a match. So I went back. I started over again, and I said, okay, I'm going to try another time. I'm going to try the reverse image search again. That time, I did find, the right keyframe to use. And it turned out that video had been shared, I think, a week before in a completely different context. And people were saying it was Malgue in Mali. So that's actually close to the border with Mauritania, so not even near the border with Burkina Faso. And they're searching around. I saw there were other videos from months before, and even in some cases years before, from the exact same location. So I had like different perspectives from the same area. And after searching around that area, that town Malgue, I was able to find a match. And yeah, I'll try to find here a picture that I can share with you guys. But, yeah, that was that other geolocation that we included. Again, that place was also attacked by Janine fighters. That was also probably a military base, right? But yeah, it's what to say, also in the Sahel, also involving Janine, but from a different location altogether. So this is one of the images where I lined up or tried to connect each identifying feature with something in the satellite image.
Good to get it geolocated for future reference, though, because now if somebody tries to use that with any additional attack in the future, there's plenty of information out on it. So it's like, oh, we know. Not connected to, you know, northern Niger or something like that, if that people are sharing it. Because the video doesn't really have that much context. It's just a crying emoji and then, you know, fires. So it can kind of like paste it on for any terror, like any type of attack going on.
Yeah, and that's something that you might see every now and then. And maybe in some cases, I don't know, like I guess the first person using that image out of context, yeah, they might have some, I don't know what their motives could be. Maybe they just want a video. They think no one will figure it out, so they just share it just to be one of the first to share it. I don't know. But yeah, that can happen sometimes. We do see it often, right? So good to keep that in mind.
Thanks so much for giving us a little breakdown on the investigation, all of you. I wanted to ask just quickly before we go into audience questions, if any of you, I know PSA, we're not experts within the space, but if any of you could give a tiny breakdown on the conflict that's ongoing in Burkina Faso and the kind of climate that the civilians within this town or within this region are facing at the moment, seeing as we're talking so much about these defensive trenches that have been supposedly been forced to have dug around the area. Does anyone feel comfortable just giving a little breakdown as to the kind of climate that the people within this region are facing at the moment?
I think I can do a little recap, right? So I think this what's happening in Burkina Faso one of the biggest reasons that this is happening there is that it's kind of a spillover from Mali as well. Mali has been seeing fighting since 2012-ish, right? Anyway, for a very long time. And this also spilled over to neighboring countries. So in Mali, you've had a lot of different armed groups fighting with the central government. You've had the CSP, DPA, I believe the acronym was. Well, these are Tuareg separatists fighting in the north. You have Janine as well there. You have other jihadists that are aligned with the Islamic State and so on, that are fighting with the Malian government or with the military. So they control large swaths of the country, in the north, in central Mali as well. And central Mali, that's already near the border, or right at the border with Burkina Faso. And I remember a few years ago, about 2-3 years ago, I and a couple of other journalists, we were looking into Mali, and we were talking with someone from ACLED, Henning Saiba. He is an ACLED researcher and knows a lot about what's going on in northern Africa, the Sahel region, Western Africa. And he was already warning me back then that this is going to this is going to spill over to Burkina Faso. It has already spilled over, but we're seeing a lot more fighting there, right? And I think one of the most active groups is Jenim. And that was also the group that conducted this last attack. So I think that's kind of the background. They have had a lot of different coups over the course of just a few years, right? This current government, or this current junta, because it's like a military junta that is in control of Burkina Faso. I think it was in 2022 or 2023. I need to double check. But they took over, the government not that long ago. And it was also after a similar attack, right? Where they started to blame the government. You see, they aren't able to protect our citizens, so we have to take over to be able to protect them from these kind of attacks. So that was at least one of the arguments. That area, it's mostly in an area further northwest, right? Like Djibo, really close to the border with Mali, where Djibo is a town that a couple of years ago, it was completely besieged by Jenim. They had to send humanitarian convoys there to deliver food or airdrops mostly. So that's kind of the background. I wouldn't call it concise, but I did my best to print through what's happening there.
Thanks so much, Yuri. I think it's just useful for people who may not be familiar with the region. Just tied to that, thank you to everyone who's put in questions so far. If you want to ask a question, please put it in the chat on the right-hand side there. In relation to that background, we've just had a question from Mike, the spelling expert, great name, who has asked two questions about the possible reasonings behind the attack. I want to just add an addendum before I ask these questions, that at Bellingcat, we don't speculate as to motives for attack. We only analyze the attack itself and try to focus on where and when rather than why. But Mike has asked, do you think this is a response from the local militias to the GRU pulling the 300 Russian operators out of the area a few weeks ago? And we're still seeing activity in the Russian base at Lumbia. Do you think this is the GRU reinforcing the garrison from the existing deployments in the Central African region or Mali? Or have these guys been freshly brought in from Russia? Can anyone, either any of you, speak to the Russian troops within the region and how that might be influencing political tensions at the moment?
Might be for Yuri. As he's watching closer.
Yeah, I cannot say a whole lot about it, right? When it comes to Burkina Faso, because like in Mali, in the Central African Republic, it is well known the Russians are active there. Every now and then you have some videos popping up of them. You have like Telegram channels where they are sharing, you know, videos of themselves, mostly from Mali, right? When it comes to Burkina Faso, I think there's a little bit less coming out from what I have seen, right? And sometimes I read some contradicting statements, right, where they're saying, they might pull out forces from Burkina Faso to redeploy them in either Russia or Ukraine. To that specific question about, I forgot what town it was that you mentioned. I think it doesn't matter. I'm not familiar with that garrison specifically, so I'd rather not tell you something that isn't true.
That might be something to monitor within the Discord server, though, if anyone is interested. I'm sure our mods can post relevant channels in the chat.
Yeah, definitely.
Going back...
Quickly. I just wanted to say, please do share that with people on the Discord, or if you'd rather send us like a direct message, that's fine as well. But yeah, if you come across something that you think might be interesting for the larger community or for us, please send it to us.
I see Subtle Knife is already typing. Thank you. Just going back to the beginning of the investigation, Stephanie has asked, how did you organize this investigation involving several researchers? So can you maybe take us through the first moment of finding out about the massacre and how you kind of mobilized as a group to address this particular attack?
Yeah, Yuri, we were talking about this a little bit in the Slack, but I mean, Violent Cat uses Slack, so it's great for, you know, organizing chats and stuff. But I had seen somebody share an update about what had happened on my feed on social media, on Twitter or X, and the number of deaths I thought was pretty extreme. So I shared it within Violent Cat's Slack on our like Africa channel just to make everybody aware, because I'm like, well, this seems like a pretty big thing that just happened. And then from there, Yuri was also talking to his source, and I think everybody kind of, as the videos were coming out, we created a smaller like kind of group to like coordinate with. And so that included Logan, who was able to grab sat imagery of the area. And we also spoke with colleagues from other outlets like Reuters. We were speaking with some of their open source reporters. And so it kind of, you know, it kind of just like kind of fell into place. It's kind of what happens a lot with like more of these like quick response incidents. It's not like, you know, we didn't go through like some sort of pitch process for this. We were just like, okay, there are videos that are coming out. We might be able to geolocate them. You know, I'll work on this video. We'll work on this other set of videos to see if it's even in the right area. We'll grab some satellite imagery. We'll look at historical satellite imagery and see how, and it all kind of like, you know, as we're each working on these different pieces, we're also contributing to a Google Doc, which, you know, is where magic happens. And so I think that's for my end. I mean, because what happened was after I did that geolocation, some other people were still working on some other geolocations or other aspects of the story. And so they just kind of like hammered that out. So I feel like it kind of happened in like sections. I don't know if you guys want to, Logan, Yuri, if you want to, but.
I think that's a good summary. It was, you know, conversation that pretty quickly led to finding some things that made writing about it fairly obvious. It wasn't something where we did a lot of planning ahead of time about how we were going to structure it or who was going to work on what. It was kind of just a nice ad hoc community of researchers coming together to figure out something to add to the incident.
Sprung into action immediately. That's what we like to hear. I wanted to ask actually how much time was spent geolocating each video, because often when we do Bellingcat research, people think that you come to the answer immediately, but a lot of the time our geolocations actually take a long time. So how much time was spent geolocating each video, and how much time was arguably wasted thinking that the Mali video was part of the massacre?
Shall I first talk about the Mali video? Because actually, we focused on that one first. I thought like, oh, there are buildings there. So instead of only trenches and trees. So I thought like, oh, that's going to be easier. So I started with that one. I wasted several precious hours looking at where that might be near Barcelona. When it turned out, it wasn't Barcelona. So I don't know exactly how many hours I spent on that, but definitely, for sure, 3 hours or more. So it was like, okay, that sucks. But then when I actually started to look at this other place, Mauge, I found it within, I think, 10, 15 minutes. So sometimes it's crazy like that, right? And I think Jake, once we had narrowed it down, you found it pretty quickly as well, right? But yeah, please correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, and to your credit with the Mali video, there are a set of buildings north of the town we were looking at where they did kind of match up. It's just they weren't the right building. It wasn't the right location. But it was a similar setup with this like little army-looking base or compound that had just the right amount of buildings in the right spots with a elevated hill nearby that all kind of... It was like vaguely hitting all the notes of the video, but it just... you couldn't really square the peg once you got down to like trying to match things up. But with the other video, the walking video with the trees and the trench, I mean, once we had that... It's almost like easy mode with like the Planet Labs imagery, because once you had the updated imagery to be like the trench ends here and the video shows the trench ended there, I mean, then it's only a matter of just lining up the trees or lining up any other element that makes sense. And so I think that was a fairly quick turnaround on that geolocation without the more recent imagery. We had a general idea of where the trench ended from the Google Earth imagery, but it wasn't really matching up. And so maybe I think you could arrive at the same location given the trees and the background, because they were fairly unique. And there was like one large tree and then a smaller tree further back, and the smaller tree in the back had this like crazy branches and stuff. So I think you could have probably found it if you spent enough time looking, but it would have been taken a lot longer. And then once you have that video geolocated, it made all the other geolocations kind of fall into place. And so it's just a matter of being like, oh, with Miguel, it's like, oh, the grass pattern. I think he was locked onto that one before, like pretty early, pretty quickly anyways, because he was also following the motorcyclist in the video and based off of that, able to match certain features along the motorcyclist's path, which is explained in the story. But when you have a longer video like that, that covers a lot of distance, it can make it a little bit easier, especially if you know the general area where it was supposed to be filmed.
So completely proving those people right.
Oh, sorry.
You do geolocations very quickly.
Only when there's good recent planet imagery or satellite imagery.
Sorry, you were going to say?
Yeah, just two things, right? Like one to what Jake was saying just now is that also it helps when you know, okay, this was likely the same guy, because at one point you could see like him looking down with the camera and you saw like the clothes that the guy was wearing, and he did that in other videos as well. He was also riding a motorbike with another guy, and you can see, okay, that's probably the same motorbike. And then when you put it all together, it's like, oh, this was probably around that same area. Let's try to look where that might have been, what route could he have taken and stuff like this. So that's one thing. The other thing is, most importantly, right, like to my point before with the other geolocation, always check with other people, right, to avoid the confirmation bias. First, I was like, you know, thinking, okay, some stuff doesn't match completely, but if this is the Barca logo, then this is the only place where I see something that remotely resembles, you know, the stuff from the video. So you should really check with others to see if they agree, or, you know, to help with that. Otherwise, you fall into your confirmation bias. So thanks to all my colleagues who helped out on this. And that's all.
Yeah, so there you go. You can still make mistakes as a researcher. I think it's good to hear that, especially for people in here who are looking to kind of do similar investigations. You've got about 15 minutes left to ask questions, so please pop them in the chat. I wanted to ask about the fact that we, as you just mentioned, we are assuming that it was actually filmed by the militia themselves. Is it common for this particular militant group to release footage of their attacks? And why do militant groups in general do this? Why do they film the atrocities that's taking place?
Shall I talk a little bit about this wonderful, not really, but this place called Tripwire, which is essentially a Twitter knockoff that's mostly used, as far as I can tell, by these jihadist organizations, like fundamentalist organizations. It's kind of like the right, the alt-right has all these other knockoffs like Parler, right? And they have Tripwire. So they have a channel there, an official channel, and they also have this Sahel News where they share sometimes some footage, but they like to be a bit more diplomatic in what they put out officially, right? You would think, you know, well, these groups, they commit horrible acts, so they probably don't care. But I wouldn't say they're like, it's not like in the early days of the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, where they were sharing all kinds of beheadings and stuff like this. It's not like that, right? They are more, can we say politically correct? Maybe it's a weird way to describe it, right? But they put out mostly statements in Arabic, sometimes in French, sometimes some videos of armored vehicles, or, you know, I don't know, weapons that they were able to loot from the military, etc. So, you know, the stuff they put out on Tripwire, I guess, is a lot less interesting to a researcher. It's less, you know, for example, these videos that we were referring to that we geolocated, they weren't posted on Tripwire. I talked to Henny Nusaiba from Eklat. He was saying that these were mostly circulating in these WhatsApp groups and stuff like that. So it's much more difficult to find them. But once they start sharing it, people who are in the group, they start to re-upload it elsewhere, and then it finds its way to the, let's say, the regular internet, right? So Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and Janeem has like an official media outlet or official media branch, like as Zakarla, Zalaka or something, which is like,
yeah,
they have statements. And so it's like, I think did they respond to this incident in using their official media saying, oh, we attacked soldiers. That's, you know, that's who we hit. Even though that's blatantly not true. I think they did, right? We included that in the piece as their response. But yeah, generally you'd see like these kind of curated video released by their official media organization, which happens with a lot of Al-Qaeda affiliates. They all have like their own little media org, and that's how they publish stuff. They publish like testimonies or fighting footage as well. Seeing the actual like fighter footage, cell phone, 3 minutes long, uncut. I for myself, I think, it's not, I don't see that often.
Yeah, thanks, Jake. Now, as Jake said, Zalaka, I can type it if you guys want, but that's their official media arm, right? But as Jake said, right, I don't see that, you know, that type of footage there that often. They did, as Jake said, release a statement. It's also, we wrote about it in the article. We refer to that statement, or maybe we even show it.
Thanks for sharing that. Quite a few people in the chat were interested in your mention of Tripwire, and Tristan's helpfully put in the chat a little link from Medium about that actual propaganda site. So thank you for doing that, Tristan. Logan's also mentioned in the chat that he's been scoping out Tripwire's footprint for quite a while. So if anyone's interested in that, they can get in touch with Logan. The operators of the site have surprisingly good OPSEC, apparently. Stephanie has just asked a question that I was about to ask myself, and that was, You needed to study every detail of the video, the behavior. Do you think you were able to reduce your exposure to the atrocities in the video? If so, how? Obviously, we're talking about a massacre here. And a lot of the researchers who, or journalists or just civilians who are listening to this are going to be interested in how we protect ourselves when covering information and atrocities like this. So can you speak a little bit about how you manage the balance between wanting to report on something like this and also protecting your mental health?
I know Belica has an archiver, archiving process for videos that are shared, that when we're collecting videos related to an incident, that has a useful tool where it puts a black and white layer, you know, it makes the imagery black and white, which is a good way to avoid, having to see too much, gore or not great visuals. But I think when looking through the video and, you know, literally counting bodies, it's a little bit more tricky. I think the main thing is you don't want to watch it with sound, and you don't just let it play. You scrub so that you're able to kind of move past things. And I don't know. I mean, it's, you need to take some time to like decompress afterwards as well, I think. Specifically with like the atrocity part, you know, seeing like dead bodies and stuff vicarious trauma is a real thing. I feel like it has resources on that as well. The main thing is you don't overload yourself, that you put it down when you, so that you don't overload yourself on that. I don't know, Yuri or Logan, if you guys had any other perspective on avoiding the vicarious trauma or like dealing with it.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say my approach was simple. I didn't watch many of the videos other researchers had and told me what they saw, and I was able to help them by finding satellite imagery, but there was no need for me to watch it, so I just didn't. So I think that's, especially in a volunteer context, like the Discord server, one of the most important things you can do is just ask yourself, do I really need to watch this? Am I helping someone by watching this traumatic content? And for this investigation, I was able to help without watching it. And that worked for me.
Yeah, thanks, Logan. For me, I think I've been working with this type of material for a long time now. It was definitely something that in the beginning when I just started, didn't know much about, right? And then it started to haunt me, right? A little bit, or not a little bit, quite a bit. And then I learned some strategies of how to deal with that. And I think with time, I picked up some methods that work for me, right? Because every person is different, right? What works for me maybe doesn't work for Logan or for Jake. For me, what's very important is to take a lot of breaks, not working on this right before you sleep, stuff like that. I think someone was sharing also, Jake was sharing an article right now. Go take a look there. There are a bunch of different recommendations. Some might be good for some, others not that much, right? So for every person, it's a little bit different. For me, I can tell you what works for me, but there's no guarantee it's going to work for you, right? To have that article with a list of different ways to cope with that, I think that's very good. So go take a look.
Thanks so much for that honest conversation. Subtle Knife said as well in the chat, and when you find yourself saying that wasn't too bad, take a break. I think that's quite good advice. Yeah, as Yuri mentioned, Jake just shared in the chat a link to Bellingcat's How to Prevent, Identify, and Address Vicarious Trauma article, and also John Carlo's How to Maintain Mental Hygiene as an Open Source Researcher article / guide that's used very frequently in our discussions. Lastly, because we've only got 4 minutes left, I wanted to ask if any of the researchers or anybody listening wants to look further into events in Burkina Faso, what open source resources would you point them towards? Is there any organizations who are regularly monitoring events in the region? And how might they start an investigation into events unfolding within Burkina Faso at the moment?
Who wants to take that one? I think, Jake, do you want to go first? I can give some advice, but yeah.
I think you would have a better idea than me, but I mean, when it comes to, there are like some accounts that are useful for following like Sahel, like watchdogs, like name, but I think we mentioned him in the article. Let me find his name.
While you're finding the name, I'm loving the cat cameo.
I know.
Giving me life right now.
Nevet. Yeah, Wasim Nasser, Sim Nasser on Twitter. He's very, I followed him for a while. He's very good at following events in the Sahel region. So I've found that it's useful to, especially like jihad related and jihadist related like content. So if you are able to like find a few experts to follow on whatever social media you use, and even if you don't use X or Twitter, it might be useful because there's still a lot of remaining experts on there. But that way you can, they generally have a good, they have their own feeds as well. So you're kind of like tapping into that. They might have lists even on Twitter, if people still use those. But that's kind of how I interact with, I guess, keeping an eye on the Sahel and whatnot. I know there's a couple good think tanks, but you probably have a better idea than I do. But the Long War Journal or some other group was like doing a lot of tracking of like jihadist attacks in the Sahel region as well.
Yeah, actually, I can share a few others, but I don't know exactly by name, right? There is Henny that I mentioned. Right now, as of late, he is a bit less active on Twitter, I see. Again, Eklat as a database is pretty useful, but it's more a database than, you know, it's not a Twitter feed or something like that. I think there are a few Telegram channels. Actually, I follow some Russian Telegram channels that every now and then have something, where some are more specialized, more focused on Africa, surprisingly. But yeah, they share a lot of useful stuff there as well. Maybe I can share that in the Discord if you guys want. I learned there is the Wagner in Africa channel, so perhaps that's the best place to share some of that.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing the Twitter links as well. I've added them in the chat. All of the links that we've discussed today will appear in the description of the podcast as well, if you're listening back. Thank you so much. It's time to wrap now. Thank you so much, Yuri, Logan, and Jake, for joining us today and for talking about this amazing investigation into such a horrific act. And thank you for all of your efforts in doing that. If you have enjoyed today and want to listen to another Stage Talk, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Please keep an eye out for the announcements in this Discord server and the events tab. That's where the next Stage Talk will appear. And I look forward to seeing you then. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you for listening to the Stage Talk. If you'd like to catch a Stage Talk live where you can ask the guest questions, join the Bellingcat Discord server by visiting www.discord.gg/Bellingcat. The music you've heard is titled Dawn by Newer Self and is courtesy of Artlist.